This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast, we will go through the key plays, the key sequence that turned this game from competitive to blowout in just a second. Text message. You can text us 713-572-4610 as we welcome you back in on a it's a reaction Monday. We're reacting to the Super Bowl pretty much all morning long here. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. Summary, that game sucked. The Chiefs could have at least put up a fight.
Yeah.
Now people can stop talking about Patrick Mahomes competing for GOAT status. In Super Bowls alone, he's not even halfway there as far as how many Brady has. I've never seen such a horrible performance. They could not even entertain us last night. Okay, and you see, now this is where I beg to differ with you. This is all about how you define entertainment. And what I would tell you, and I think I can speak for Seth here, is that we as a show were highly entertained by the Chiefs getting their ass kicked for 4 hours.
Yes. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't have watched if that was the Bills. I might not have watched the second half.
Right.
And it would have been a bad Super Bowl. I'd be like, oh, yeah, the Bills aren't ready for prime time yet again. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I said in the fourth quarter, I said for the whole fourth quarter, we need a camera on the Chiefs bench. You know, we need at least an alternative broadcast that's just Chief bench cast. You know, throw it on FS1 or something. Or like a picture-in-picture of Mahomes, just like cycling from Mahomes to Kelsey to Chris Jones, just to see what their facial expressions are on the bench, because I was highly entertained by that game. And I think a lot of people were. I think there's a lot of people that were sick of the Chiefs, that were sick of the Chiefs being in the Super Bowl, sick of the three-peat talk, sick of how the Chiefs themselves and maybe people that rooted for the Chiefs have been carrying themselves very similar to Patriot fans for a decade, that kind of thing. So, sir or ma'am texting in saying you were not entertained last night, I get it. I'm not going to tell you how to fan. People determine what entertains them, and I respect that. I'm just telling you right now that if you're expecting this to be a store that you walk into that shares your view on this game not being entertaining, you've walked into the wrong store.
Yeah,
down the hall somewhere.
Because of the circumstances, I found that a highly entertaining game, and that it was also really, it was just fun to watch that Eagles defense turn Pat Mahomes into one of the worst quarterbacks ever in Super Bowl history in the first half. I mean, and really, the entire time that the game actually mattered or they could do anything, Mahomes was atrocious. So it wasn't just that they weren't getting the best version of Mahomes. They turned Mahomes into a horrible, horrible, horrible quarterback, which was fun to watch because they were doing it just by physically dominating and destroying the offensive line and then and playing good coverage downfield to where Mahomes had no answers. It was beautiful. It was a lot of fun to watch.
The most dominant performance I've ever watched in a Super Bowl, and I think this is a way to kind of frame how bad Mahomes looked, and this is going to predate some of you, but the 85 Bears took the New England Patriots to the woodshed that year. And that was one of the most lopsided Super Bowls ever. Like, that was never... The final score was 46-10. It was never close. The Bears defense was swallowing up the Patriots. I mean, Richard Dent was the MVP of that Super Bowl. That tells you how dominant the defense was, that a defensive lineman was the MVP of that Super Bowl. The quarterback for the Patriots in that Super Bowl was Tony Eason, who's one of the worst quarterbacks to ever play in a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes looked like Tony Eason in that game last night.
Mind you, the Eagles have two rookie cornerbacks. Like, that's what's so impressive about that. Oh, you got two rookie cornerbacks. All right, great. They had impressive rookie seasons, but now you're going up against Pat Mahomes. So good luck, rookies. How about a pick six for you?
Yeah.
The Cooper DeJean interception, Quinyon Mitchell could have intercepted it if Cooper DeJean hadn't. It was just a brilliant defensive performance by the Eagles.
Yeah, and Quinyon Mitchell, you didn't hear his name all night, which when you're a corner is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, like that to me is another thing, Seth, and we're going to get into these highlights here. We got a nice long segment here, so we're going to do acknowledge me in about 15 minutes. Is that Howie Roseman's offseason? You know, we talked about that a lot last week. Like, man, I don't know that any team has had a better offseason than the Philadelphia Eagles did this past year. Hiring or promoting Vic Fangio, he was a consultant for them last year, making Vic Fangio their full-time defensive coordinator. Kellen Moore as the offensive coordinator is leaving after 1 year to go get a head coaching job. And then the actual acquisition, Zach Bond had an interception that we're going to hear in a minute here.
Yeah.
The two draft picks, as you just pointed out, Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean were outstanding. Saquon Barkley was the least impactful of all of those newbies, you know, of all the acquisitions that Howie Roseman had. And yet, even with Saquon, he did some things in the passing game. He did keep them in front of the chains. Like, he didn't have any big explosive runs, but they were in second and six.
He was, by virtue of being the focus, he opened things up for
that's
a lot
a good
of
point.
Other people. Yeah, they were, you could tell, the game plan was, don't let Saquon Barkley kill us.
Right.
We got to be sure Saquon Barkley doesn't kill us.
But the first deep shot of the game, the one that was called a touchdown by Jahan Dotson at first, Saquon Barkley on blitz pickup made that play happen. You know, if he doesn't pick up that blitz, then Jalen Hurts is probably, at best, running around behind the line of scrimmage trying to find somebody to throw to.
He's had some really nice moments in pass protection in the playoffs.
Yes.
Really some clutch, difficult blocks.
Yep.
And if you go back to the Chiefs game versus the Texans, the running backs were awful in pass protection.
Awful.
They were basically, the running backs were as likely to leg whip CJ Stroud as they were to actually block their guys.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. All right, so let's get to the sequence that changed the game here. It was 10-0. Eagles were up, and I know I saw at least Nick Wright, I saw tweet that, well, Chiefs are down 10-0. This is where the game begins. Kind of like what Nick had been saying throughout the playoffs, like, the Chiefs season doesn't even really begin till the divisional round of the postseason. You know, like, the regular season doesn't really matter. And look, for this postseason, he'd been right, and others who claim that had been right, till they got to this game, and they said, well, now they're down 10-0. Now they're right where they're comfortable, being down double digits in the Super Bowl. Their previous Super Bowl wins, they were down double digits at various times in that game. Didn't work out that way. Down 10-0, the Chiefs got the ball and went sack, sack, and then on 3rd and 16, this happened.
It's a 3rd and 16 for the Chiefs, and a shotgun snap from their own 24, rolling out of the pocket. Mahomes lines right. It's intercepted at the 40. And picked off by DeGene, who comes to the near side of the 30. Got it back at the 20, breaks a tackle, the 10, the 5, to the pylon. Touchdown! Eagles have got a pick six!
Yeah, that was a horrible, horrible decision and throw by Pat Mahomes. And it was it's a half field read. This is stuff that you do for rookies as he's rolling out to simplify it. And he makes a bad throw on the run, which wasn't even a good decision to make the throw he was trying to make. And it was, that's all Pat Mahomes. That's all. You can't even blame the pass rush on that play specifically.
No.
So it was, that was just a horrible, horrible play by Pat Mahomes.
The two teams would then exchange punts. The Chiefs would get the ball back down 17-0 with a little under 2 minutes to go in the first half. So this is where, if I'm a Chiefs fan at this point, I'm like, all right, let's go down and get some points. We get the ball to start the second half, right? This game is not out of control yet. The defense has actually played pretty well. They've only given up 10 of the 17 points, and a lot of the reason the Eagles scored was they were able to hit one deep shot. We're controlling Saquon Barkley. There's a lot at that point, Seth, that I felt like if you're the Chiefs, you can talk yourself into. We played our worst football. We're down 17-0. We've got the ball, and we're going to get the ball again to start the second half. But unfortunately, very first play on that drive, this happens.
Mahomes in the gun, gets the snap, drips him back in the end zone. Pressured on a five-man run, throws a quick pass, diving interception. It's made by Bond on the hash mark at the 14. Patrick Mahomes has just thrown his second interception today.
Yep, second interception.
That one, at least he had an excuse in that Josh Sweat drove Joe Tooney directly into Mahomes as he was throwing it. Yeah. I mean, that was a good decision. Hollywood Brown was wide open over the middle, and it was just a really good play. It was a really good play on a poorly thrown ball by Zach Bond.
Yeah.
But the pass rush, again, was just so dominant versus that Chiefs offensive line that they just didn't have a chance. It was beautiful.
Zach Bond, 1 year, $3.5 million, might be one of the best contracts in the last decade in the NFL. Yeah. First team All-Pro.
And I would go to Josh Sweat, the guy that provided the pressure on that, where people are asking, like, how do you get an offense or a defense like this? It's they've gotten the most out of guys like Josh Sweat was what, a fourth round pick. They've done really, really well drafting, and they've got three first rounders on the defensive line, but some of their other players on defense, like Zach Bond, who's a journeyman free agent, or Josh Sweat, who is a fourth rounder, those guys were just huge last night.
Well, they were huge, and then there's Jalen Carter, who, if we recall his draft saga, he might have been the best actual football player in his draft, but he got in trouble at Georgia after the season was over with all the drag racing stuff. He ends up falling to 9, and the Eagles move up and get him. You know, like that's what good GMs do. So the Zach Bond gets the interception, then two plays later, this happens.
They've radioed in the call. Hurts has it right now. 1:40 to go in the second quarter. Second down and 8 for the Eagles. After picking up Mahomes, shotgun snap to Hurts, left tackle block, line drive throw, caught on the 5, A.G. Brown hits the pylon, far side, touchdown Philadelphia! They're destroying the Chiefs!
They were, and they continue
They're
to.
They're destroying the Chiefs!
Yeah. What's funny about that, okay, so I'm curious your thoughts on this, Seth. That made it 24-0, so the Chiefs actually get the ball back again. Because the Eagles scored so quick, they get the ball back with a minute 35. The Eagles only ate up like 19 seconds of clock, if that. They got the ball back a minute 35, so you're down 24-0 now. You need to be aggressive to go get points. And the Chiefs, they get a holding penalty on Trey Smith. Makes it first and 20. Totally short circuits
that,
the
that
drive.
One, by the way, was... the Trey Smith holding penalty. Was that the one where he grabbed his face mask?
No, that was a different one. Yeah, I don't know. He dragged Jalen Carter to the ground.
That's right, yeah.
So the Chiefs end up punting. The Eagles had two timeouts with the ball at their own 37 with 25 seconds left. I don't know if you were listening to the commentary at that point or not. I was expecting Brady to go, look, you got two timeouts. You got the Chiefs on their heels. It's Patrick Mahomes on the other side. You can never have too many points. Like, take a shot here and see if you can go get another 3 points at the end of the half. I was surprised how conservative Brady wanted them to be in that situation.
Yeah, Brady thought, just chew up some clock, don't give them that much time, and then
get to the locker room.
And then they did not. The Eagles did not heed his advice.
No, they did heed his advice. This is when there was 25 seconds left.
Oh, with 25 seconds left. No. Okay, sorry. I was thinking about the big AJ Brown touchdown.
No.
Yeah, there's 25 seconds. I don't know. You can only do too much.
Yeah.
Like,
I saw they had two timeouts. Take a shot down the middle of the field and see if you can get in field goal range.
Except you're not getting... Maybe.
I guess more bad can... I was just surprised Brady, of all people, were like, get in the locker room. I'm like, oh, damn, Tom. You're the goat.
Yeah.
Keep your foot on the gas.
I've grown more conservative over time with that.
Yeah.
I used to be the one that would always criticize coaches for not being super aggressive at the end of the half. But when you look at the risk versus reward, it's just at that point you're gonna have to take some risks to actually do anything.
Yep.
Yeah, I was cool with it.
Second half starts, the Chiefs get the ball, so something's got to happen here for the Chiefs. What happens? They end up punting. They eat up 3 minutes of clock, moving around for 15 yards. They end up punting the ball back to the Eagles. Eagles get a field goal, so now it's 27-0, and then the Chiefs get the ball. It wasn't just a field goal on that first possession of the Eagles in the second half. It's that they ate up almost 7 minutes of clock. Like the Eagles up 24-0, ate up almost half of the third quarter. By the time the Chiefs got the ball back, Seth, there was 5 minutes and change left in the third quarter, and they're down 27-0. So the Chiefs end up moving the ball to about midfield, and they turn the ball over on downs. That was when Maddox stepped in front of Hopkins and knocked the ball away.
Yeah.
Fourth down.
Yeah.
Who was a sub at that point. One of the DBs was out. Either DeGene or Quinyon Mitchell were getting some attention on the sidelines at that point. I think it was DeGene. So Maddox is in there as a backup, and he ends up breaking up a ball on fourth down.
And it was a really poorly thrown ball to DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
It was just too short and inside, and could have been another pick six if it had been a little bit worse.
Yes.
Just a really bad, what Mahomes tends to do in these situations.
Yep.
He falls apart.
So
you get a little middle Mr. Grumpy Pants on the sideline. Did you notice coming out at the half, at the beginning of the second half, Mahomes already looked like they just had a bad drive or something. He's shaking his head.
They're not used to being in this situation. You know what I mean? Like they're, rare is the point where they're down, 24-0. I mean, I can only think of one other time when they were down 24-0 in the postseason.
Yeah.
That ended up working out pretty good for them. So one more here.
And this was the one where Brady, before this play, they'd been saying, "All right, maybe
take a shot." Burn clock
before the Devontae Smith touchdown.
So the Chiefs turn the ball over on downs.
Yeah.
The Eagles get the ball back at midfield, and they did the opposite of being conservative.
Yeah. In the pistol, on the NFL logo, from the Kansas City 46, Eagles take over first and 10. The shotgun snap, the fake handoff, and Hurts drops back 5, winds up, long arching pass, down the middle, it's caught over the shoulder in the end zone. Touchdown, Smith! And that may make it insurmountable!
Yeah, it did. It was 31-0 at that point. It would get to 34-0. It would get to 40-6. That was a great throw. I thought it was an underrated catch, too, by Devontae Smith to hold on to it.
He kind of had to catch it on his hip there.
Yeah,
that was he adjusted to it really well.
Good play on both ends.
Hurts had so much time to let everything develop.
Yep.
Just watching from the field cam view, he's just sitting there with his legs completely still and could load up and get it.
Yeah, I thought from that pick six by DeGene, really that possession – it started with the two sacks. Like that's what flipped the game. I think the Chiefs could have managed being down 10-0 and eventually figured some things out. But they went from 10-0 to 24-0 in the blink of an eye, and then they just don't do anything out of the gate in the second half. They give up a field goal. The Eagles did, in some sense, Seth. I mean, this game didn't play anything like that Commanders game. What's weird is the NFC title game was 55-23. And I felt that was a much closer game than this Super Bowl was. I'm talking about the Eagles win over the Commanders in the NFC title game. They hung 55 on the Commanders, and that was a way more competitive game than this Super Bowl was, that only wound up being an 18-point win by the Eagles. You know what I mean? Like, it was that Commanders game was 34-23, and the Commanders had the ball in the middle of the third quarter. They just couldn't hold on to the football. They were fumbling in the worst parts of the field to fumble, and the Eagles were turning literally every turnover into 7 points. In this game was really from the point that we just played on, that Cooper DeGene pick six on, this thing was two teams playing completely different levels of football the entire afternoon, other than garbage time where Mahomes is picking on the Eagles' backups.
If I'm going to succumb to what I do every year now these days, which is, okay, look at a rookie quarterback performance and just think, oh, he's going to be awesome forever. I don't know. Washington versus the Eagles right now is more my kind of like, oh, wow, that's going to be awesome next year, versus a rematch of the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl or anything like that.
Yep.
I think the Chiefs, I think that it's very, very possible we look back at that Super Bowl last night as, okay, yeah, boy, the Chiefs are yet another example of, hey, dynasties ain't so easy. And you've got a quarterback who hasn't really been playing at his peak the last couple of years, but he's had some great moments in the playoffs. But it's hard to keep a team together. And it's really, really hard to rely on awesome defense for multiple years in a row. And the Chiefs have some work to do. They, like, I'm not look, they beat the crap out of the Texans in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
You know, I'm not sitting here acting like, oh, yeah, it's just going to be easy. But I think that next year it's going to be that much closer between the Ravens, the Bills, and the Chiefs than even it was this year.
Yeah, I think for the NFL, last night was a huge, if I can invoke Rocky IV, this was a huge the Russian is cut moment. You know what I mean? Like the Chiefs, they didn't just bleed last night. They bled out in the middle of the ring. You know, like that was Apollo Creed getting killed at the beginning of Rocky IV last night.
I mean,
you
go to the Astros in the playoffs a couple years ago where they didn't make the World Series, but you could see, all right, man, this is a team that still gets by on a lot of veteran savvy, and they have experience in the playoffs, and that really, really matters, and yet they're not the same team.
Yeah.
And I think you could say that about the Chiefs all season long, that, yeah, the veteran savvy was definitely there, and it wasn't just pure luck that they were winning all those one-score games. But the genuinely great teams don't tend to have that many one-score games.
No.
And that savvy can only do so much when you go up against a team like the Eagles. They were just physically dominant. They beat the snot. They beat the snot out of the Chiefs. They didn't have any answers. The Chiefs didn't have any answers for just getting punched in the face over and over and over again.
Nope.
I mean, look at Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce had some nice catches eventually, but that's it. Once he catches it, that's it for him. Just versus the good teams.
Seth,
Texans defense wasn't playing well enough to be in that category of really good defense. But they're running on fumes at this point.
It was 34-0. When the Chiefs crossed midfield for the first time.
Yeah.
It was 13-1 at the half in first downs. It was like 179-30 in total yards. It was literally exactly 2-1 in time of possession, you know, 20 minutes to 10 minutes. Like this was an ass kicking that continued to be an ass kicking well into the second half. It was 40-6. I was actually mad at the Eagles for giving up those two touchdowns. At the end of the only reason I like the DeAndre Hopkins touchdown is it pushed his yardage total over the total that I gave to everybody as a best bet last week. You know, he ended up 18 yards or something.
When Hopkins dropped that one early on his first target,
I was hot.
You must have been fuming.
Oh,
on that.
I was hot. Yeah. I was hot. Of all people to drop it, not just somebody who never drops footballs, but someone who I have a history with. You know, it felt personal to me. You know, felt personal.
Yeah.
A lot of texts rolling in.
That was a tough moment for you. I was worried about you.
I was okay. Let's see. For real, the Eagles tried to be respectful, and the Chiefs didn't get the memo to just start running the ball and go home. They got everything they deserved, the Eagles. That's true. That's true.
Look, Vic is very, Vic is the kind of coordinator that was going to play a bit softer, and that he understands that there's a chance that you're going to give up a big player. Whenever you start, even though you're not playing prevent, you're still going out of your normal mode somewhat. And I knew there was a chance for it, but Vic's really good about playing that game of like, let's not worry about what the final yardage is. Let's not get greedy and try to, you know, pitch a shutout or anything else like that. So I assumed that there'd be some fourth quarter scoring by the Chiefs. I disregard any of that fourth quarter stuff by the Chiefs.
There
is a part of me though. Yeah. I wish the box score totally reflected what a butt whooping it
was. Yeah. I mean, 40-22 is still that's still a butt whooping by NFL standards, but it was 40-6. At one point, if it could have stayed at 40, I'm getting greedy now. I think a lot of America last night got what they wanted. I think there's a big chunk of America that wanted to see the Chiefs get their comeuppance.
I was, when it was 24-0, every Texans fan had flashbacks to 2019, where you say, all right, not so soon, not so quick.
Yep.
It was just, I was pretty confident at that point because it was just such a different type of game than when the Texans were up 24-0.
Yep.
I mean, the Eagles were just absolutely bludgeoning the Chiefs at that point.
Yeah, no, the Texans 24-0 was a little phony. You had a block punt for a touchdown. You had a 5-yard drive after a Tyreek Hill fumble and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it was also, you know what? No matter where you fall on the conspiracy theories about the refs or anything else like that, I think everybody probably just enjoyed a brief respite from having to hear about it or talk about it.
Yes.
After that first AJ Brown offensive pass interference, I was like, oh, God, please, let's not. I don't want this to be the story of the game.
I thought it was a well-called game. I did. I thought. Yeah. I thought. I don't think either team. I mean, look, it was 40-6 at one point. It's hard to say. The refs favored one team or the other. That was an ass kicking.
That first AJ Brown offensive pass interference was totally justified. Yeah. It's just that the first two angles they showed of it, it didn't look like anything at all
because
you couldn't see him actually grabbing the face mask. So once I saw AJ Brown grab the face mask, I thought, all right. Well, surely people will understand that.
Surely.
Turns out, no. You know the funny thing about that, Sean? I don't know if you noticed. The commercial that played immediately after that, or at least the first or second commercial, was that is it a remake of How to Train Your Dragon? And the scene, there's a scene in there where the kid reaches out and gently touches the nose of the dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, oh, OPI.
OPI.
OPI on that little dragon trainer Viking kid.
That's hilarious. My wife had actually at one point, while we're watching the game, gets up to go to the bathroom in the middle of a drive. She's like, I got to make sure I'm back for the commercials.
Yeah.
you're one of those fans.
I don't know. I feel like people are perennially let down by the commercials these days. I thought some were good, some were bad. Though, the thing I didn't like, this is my big protest. There were two commercials that they made me physically uncomfortable.
Seal?
One, Seal is a Seal. Yeah. And then that Tubi commercial with the people who had skulls shaped like hats.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was unsettling.
Can't unsee that, yeah.
I hope I'm not going to get canceled because I'm making fun of people who have skulls shaped like cowboy hats.
No.
But that was, that was not cute. Or I did not appreciate that.
All right, weigh in on the text page. 713-572-4610. Let's get some of these acknowledgments in for the weekend. Big, big weekend that was. It was a Super Bowl. We haven't talked about coaching too much yet. I'm going to do two acknowledgments here. Nick Sirianni.
Acknowledge me.
And Vic Fangio.
Acknowledge me.
We're happy for Vic Fangio for sure. Former defensive coordinator for the Texans when Seth played. Nick Sirianni, man. Look, we make a lot of jokes about this introductory press conference right here.
Next thing that's very important to me is that we build a smart football team. That we have a smart football team here. And I know we have the people in place to do that. The first part of that, the first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're gonna have systems in place that are easier to learn. All right, complicated to the defense or offense that they're going against or the special teams group they're going against, but easy for us to learn. Because when we can learn our system and we can get good at our system, then our talent can take over. Less thinking equals talent takeover, but we need to have systems in place, and we will have systems in place.
Yeah, turns out he was right.
everything about Sirianni and everything he said there was 100% dead on accurate.
Delivery.
It was just he was so excited
that
it came off goofy. But even now, listening to it, now that he's been to a couple of Super Bowls and won one, you tend to think of it as like, yeah, boy, that was just a brilliant mind at work. I remember when Einstein first presented his theory of special relativity.
Yeah.
I was like, who is this clown?
Right.
How does he get up there with that haircut and try to get me to believe this nonsense?
Sirianni's Einstein, basically.
And eventually I was like, oh, yeah, boy, that hair is, that's part of his whole genius. First, yeah, I get it.
First four seasons, he's been to the postseason every year. He's been to two Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl. That's about as good a start to a head coaching career as you're going to find. You got to give
him. Man, they have withstood some drama. If you look at Sirianni and how close he may have been to getting fired, the fact that he and Jalen Hurts seemed to be at odds, reportedly were at odds for much of last year, the mess that their offense and defense was last year, it's an incredible comeback story. It's sandwiched between two Super Bowl appearances.
And even in game last night, Seth, when it was 17-0 and the Eagles got the ball and they ended up having to punt the football, AJ Brown was cursing to himself, or seemingly like passive aggressively cursing at Sirianni walking off the field, and Sirianni's giving it right back to him, and you're watching and you're going, man, this is a team. They are not afraid to get in each other's grills. And then what happens? AJ Brown catches a touchdown pass 5 minutes later. You know,
it's like these. It's funny because teams take on the character of their head coaches, and sometimes if you have like a volatile, combative guy who's really emotional as a head coach, that can be a disaster.
Yeah,
depending on what his personality is.
Yep.
And with Sirianni, it feels like I hate to jump into stereotypes here because his last name's Sirianni. I don't know if he's actually even Italian or not, but it's kind of like some of the Italian families that, like, they'll argue and yell and everything, but they all love each other, and that's just kind of the way they communicate.
Yep.
So I like that's what it feels like that team has become. Like, they don't take it personal. They'll get in heated discussions and everything, but then they'll go eat a plate of pasta
there
together.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts.
Acknowledge me.
MVP of the Super Bowl. Went from being Tua's backup at Alabama. Stuck around for another year at Bama just to refine his passing game with Dan Enos there. And then goes to Oklahoma. Becomes a more complete quarterback. And now here he is, five seasons into his NFL career. And he is a Super Bowl champion. He's a Super Bowl MVP. And when these quarterback power rankings are coming out in the offseason here, Jalen Hurts needs to be mentioned in the same breath with all the guys that were in the MVP conversation this year.
This is what I don't think Jalen Hurts gets enough credit for. I mean, the first 3 years of his career, he got the Alex Smith treatment. I mean, he's had, or these last 3 years, he's had three different offensive coordinators in 3 years.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to have a fourth one next year
because
the reports are that Kellen Moore, is that official yet or not?
I think Jeffrey Lurie said something in the press conference about Kellen Moore leaving.
Kellen Moore is going to be the Saints head coach. Yeah. And he's going to have to run it back again with a new offensive coordinator. It's funny because Sirianni isn't a defensive-minded head coach, but he's also not the one that anybody wants being the play caller. So they're going to be in this – they'll have this issue – that the Texans or anybody else with a defensive-minded coach or a special teams coach is going to have, that, yeah, you're going to have to switch out offensive coordinators. And in the modern NFL, I think it's up to the quarterback to be the kind of guy that can handle that.
Yep.
And Jalen Hurts clearly is.
He is. We're going to talk a lot about Jalen Hurts today on the show. We're deep on the Super Bowl today. We will do a mock draft injection, though, in the next segment. Snoop Dogg.
Acknowledge me!
Lead the MC of the NFL Honors. He dropped this little joke the other night.
Because I've been a football fan for a long, long time. I mean, I remember back when the Cowboys was good. I remember back when the Chiefs was bad. And I remember... what was it? Bill Belichick's girlfriend wasn't even born yet.
I don't even know if that joke made sense, but the fact that he was just getting a shot in at the age difference between Belichick and his girlfriend, who, by the way, did you see the Dunkin' Donuts commercial that ran, Seth? That had the whole Boston Mafia in there of Ben Affleck and Belichick and the girlfriend were in the Dunkin' Donuts ad.
That's something that's making me a
big sign of commitment right there to have her in an advertisement with you.
Well, it's starting to make me a little uneasy. For Belichick, that she is so public. I don't know. It feels like there's an opportunistic thing going on. I don't know. She's out there a lot.
Yeah.
Like, more so than other coaches' wives and girlfriends.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She almost seemed shocked with the reaction to it, 'cause they pan right over to her and Belichick.
Yeah.
She almost seemed shocked to find out she was young. Like,
oh, you know, who was shocked last night was Taylor Swift.
Oh, yeah.
She got
What's going
booed.
On? She's not used to that, man.
It's an Eagles crowd.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen?
Anytime,
it's an Eagles crowd. You could tell during the intros when, frankly, I knew things were going downhill for the Chiefs as soon as John Hamm couldn't even keep his voice while he was trying to get the crowd hyped up.
Yeah.
And he's getting booed lustily by what sounded. And I thought, all right, well, you know, maybe there's a bunch of Eagles fans there. But then when the Eagles got introduced, it was loud in favor of the Eagles. So it didn't seem quite as slanted as that Broncos-Seahawks Super Bowl, where it just, that felt like a Seahawks home game.
It did, yeah.
But it definitely, and maybe it's just because Eagles fans are just naturally that much louder. It felt like the Eagles had more support there.
No, they showed the pan back of the crowd showed a lot more green than red, for sure.
I felt bad for the marching band at the intro where they had some of the musicians stationed up in the tunnels.
Yeah.
Because I just thought at some point here we're going to see an Eagles fan trying to angrily push his way past past some band member who's just sitting. He's just trying to do the thing they told him to do, and he's standing right there in the entrance to one of the sections.
I'm just trying to play my trombone here, dude. One of the
guys had a security guard behind him, but it was like an 87-year-old woman who was dancing to the music.
Yeah. What did you think of the upbeat version of God Bless America? Like the God Bless America, not the national anthem, but God Bless America, where they had, it was a...
Is that woman singing?
Yeah, it was a woman and the trombone guy. But it was kind of like a jazzy New Orleans upbeat God Bless America, and they're panning around. I'm used to the anthem and God Bless America having a bit more gravitas to it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice anything different about it. I wasn't really paying attention.
I remember thinking that
I enjoyed the God Bless America more than the national anthem.
Yeah. It was, so did bettors of the under on the anthem. It was very controversial, the anthem, if it hit the under or the over. It was right at 2 minutes, which was the number. But everybody was angry that John Batiste, when he sang... Land of the Free, three separate times. They're like, oh, the fix is in. He's trying to go over. He's saying it three separate times. I think it still went under for a lot of places.
The other thing I didn't really like was Harry Connick Jr. in that environment. Like, Harry Connick Jr. is like a crooning pianist and everything. Like, it doesn't feel like he's right for that moment.
I didn't know that's who that was. I asked Amy, I'm like, who is that? She's like, it's Harry Connick Jr. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's been around a while. He looks good. Been around.
Yeah, he looks good. Yeah. In terms of aging celebrities last night, I think Kevin Costner won the show. Mostly because Brandy wouldn't shut up about how good he looked. They showed him for like 3 seconds. I was like, okay, first of all, he's sitting next to Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a contrast there.
A little bit.
But could you shut up about Kevin Costner for a second, Brandy?
Oh, you know what? Brandy, this is for you. Kevin Costner.
Acknowledge
Costner for looking so good. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. That was Acknowledge Me. We do that every Monday.
I thought the Chiefs should have had, instead of John Hamm introducing the team, I thought it would have been Paul Rudd. Isn't he the most famous Chiefs fan?
He was there, too. He was there. Looked like he was there with his kid.
He's sitting next to Adam Sandler.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul Rudd was there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. Still reacting to the Super Bowl. We'll circle back to the Super Bowl at the top of the hour, but it's draft season. Now it's draft season for everybody, all 32 teams. Mock draft injection. We do it on Monday, or we do it each day during draft season. Who does Cynthia Freeland of NFL.com, she's respected, who does she have the Texans taking in her mock draft? We'll break it all down coming up next. Also, a reminder that if you listen for an hour each day to the Odyssey app, that's your entry to win our Slam Dunk in Vegas national contest. If you do win, you and three friends are headed out to Vegas to stay at Circa, to hang at Circa, to go to the sports book, and you can enjoy the biggest March hoops party at their stadium swim. As part of your ultimate college basketball championship experience, you're going to have an extra $20,000 in your pocket to spend while you're in Las Vegas. Download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Mock Draft Injection is next.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Survivor 48 is here, and after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast is driven by West Point Lincoln at Katy Freeway. 1 mile west of the Beltway, exit Kirkwood, under the giant American flag. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
We'll circle back to the Super Bowl at the top of the hour. Who are we most happy for after last night's win? We'll talk about that at 8 o'clock today. Mock Draft Injection. We started them last week. It's draft season now officially. The red carpet rolled out to Green Bay, I believe, is where the draft is this year in late April. So the Texans are picking 25th. We now know the Eagles will pick 32nd. The Chiefs will pick 31st because the playoffs do determine part of the draft order. And for every mock draft we've had so far, mock draft injection is what we call this. We did three or four of them last week. I believe every single one so far, Seth, has had the Texans taking an interior offensive lineman. They had, I don't recall which mockers were which picks, but I know that the three we did had Tyler Booker, Donovan Jackson, and then Gray Zabel from North Dakota State last week. So
I like Gray Zabel, too. One of our listeners was incredibly angry with me because I was pointing out some of the concerns about Gray Zabel, the guard. So I went and did my it's not like I would be upset with the pick or anything. There's more than anything is that you brought up what's his name there?
Trevor Penning.
Trevor, you brought up Trevor Penning, so we were talking, and he thought I was making a direct comparison to Trevor Penning, which I wasn't. But man, some of the people get heated about the draft, Sean.
Yeah,
I don't know if you noticed.
Now that you mention it, they do.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. And any of the mock drafts we've done so far, there hasn't been a guy that I've been like, oh no, that's a stupid pick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you're picking 25th, so you know you're not getting the tippy top of the draft. Let's do this one here. This is Cynthia Freeland, who is. Works for NFL.com, best known for being kind of an advanced stats analytics type person, Cynthia Freeland. I like her. She does good work. She had a mock draft that went up over the weekend, and so let's do it here. With the 25th pick in the Cynthia Freeland NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Matthew Golden, wide receiver from the University of Texas, by way of the University of Houston. He was
by way of one of the Klein high schools, is he not?
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a Klein kid. I don't know. I'm old enough to remember when Klein was just one high school. And in my mind, it still is.
Yeah. So, he's a good player, man. I would welcome Matthew Golden, especially in the short term, because I think he's a little bigger. He's 6 feet tall, so a little bigger than Tank. But I think there's some similarities to the way he operates.
Yeah.
To Tank in terms of the quickness, the ability to get open.
And that's it would be, you can totally envision him being one of these guys that gets taken in the late first round or in the second round. Wide receivers are just bountiful these days at that spot in the draft. I'd be very, very happy with this pick.
Yeah, yes. I would too. Cynthia Freeland.
Because he's not small, like you said, like Tank. I just wonder how they're thinking about Tank right now and the likelihood that he comes back in 2025 at all. But then also, all right, what for a guy whose calling card is his extreme speed and extreme twitchiness, if they can realistically expect him ever to get that back again. It's a huge, huge X factor in building a team.
It's a really good point. I think the thing, for purposes of what we're talking about here, Seth, it's... The question is, how much are they going to know by late April? And so how do they? Tank may still have procedures to undergo by then. I mean, there's multiple surgeries reportedly involved with this knee. I mean, I almost think you've got to operate this offseason as if Tank is not part of the. I think you got to operate certainly as if he's not part of your team in 2025.
Yeah,
and if you get him back, it's gravy. I'm happy with a trade-off of not having him in 2025 if it means we get the old Tank back in 2026. You know what I mean? If the football gods were to come to me and say, okay, Tank's going to be gone for a year, but when you do get him back, he's going to look like he did before the knee injury, I would happily make that trade-off.
I think there's a much higher chance of Stephon Diggs being on the roster and active on the roster this year than Tank Dell at this point in my mind. And part of that, too,
that's interesting.
Without getting too heavy into all the capology of it, because of the way Stephon Diggs' contract is structured, it does make a lot of sense for them to try to re-sign him.
Yeah.
And that whether you look at, maybe you really love Cooper Kupp over Stephon Diggs coming off of injury or whatever, for whatever. I like Stephon Diggs better. But even if you liked Cooper Kupp more, you can pay Stephon Diggs the same amount of money and have it be less of a total net effect on your cap than if you let Stephon Diggs go and then bring Cooper Kupp in.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. The key date in Texans cap, oh no, it's Houston Stressens pointed this out, and Texans cap may have as well, but I just saw Garrett from Stressens point this out. A week from today, February the 17th, is when Stephon Diggs' contract officially voids, which means if they don't sign him before next Monday to an extension, the Texans get hit with $16 million in dead money, and Stephon Diggs is a free agent. So this is a key week. If you're somebody who wants to bring Diggs back, if you're somebody who's worried about the Texans taking a $16 million dead money hit for Diggs leaving, the key date is a week from today. It has to happen this week or else he's... Now, he may still come back at that point, but he'd be coming back after dipping his toe into the free agency waters.
And I just think with Stephon Diggs, whether he comes back from the injury healthy or not, he's still going to be 33 years old at that point, correct? This will be his 32-year-old season. Stephon Diggs, I would guess, is looking at this as, all right, I got to see if there's a team out there that wants to give me a 3-year deal. And I think even if the Texans make him a really respectable offer, he might just feel like, no, there's got to be better than that out there.
Yeah.
Like, even if he's being realistic about his knee situation and everything, I'm not optimistic right now that they'll get something figured out in the next week. But I hope they do. I do hope that. I don't. He's been very, very durable in his career. And as you pointed out last week, an ACL happens all the time at any age. I would worry more about it if it was one of these quote-unquote old man injuries, a lingering quadriceps issue or a muscle or something like that, or an Achilles tendon, then I would worry about the ACL.
Yeah, if it was like an Anthony Davis abductor pull when nobody touches you, you know, like that's just, yeah. I don't think Diggs is what he was at his peak of his powers, but I don't think it's because of injuries. Like
they were much worse as an offense after he was gone.
That's a great point too. Yes. Yeah.
Like you look at where they rank offensively in a lot of categories, and it's middle of the road, but they were in the bottom half definitively in the second half without Stephon Diggs. Like they were a little bit above average with Stephon Diggs, and then they were just a bad offense without him.
That's right. Text message, Matthew Golden, Klein Kane High School. Good job, Seth.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Klein.
I knew it
was a Klein. Interior O-line, interior D-line, or linebacker, unless there's a stud there. That's what one texter wants.
Wait, what did he want?
Interior O-line, interior D-line, or linebacker, unless there's a stud there.
Okay, linebacker.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that you want a linebacker, especially in the first round.
Yeah.
I feel like they're pretty well set at linebacker. Remember, Christian Harris was dealing with whatever the hell he was dealing with.
Yeah.
They've got three good linebackers on a team that usually only needs two linebackers out there. Most teams in the NFL play more nickel and dime than they do their base defense. So, and they've got three good linebackers. And two of them young guys that I feel good about. So I'm not especially hot and heavy on getting a linebacker.
It's almost like
right
they got
now.
3.5 when you count with Jalen Petrie. I mean, Jalen Petrie operates like a linebacker as much as he operates like a safety, yeah, or a slot corner. Text message, yeah, depth at wide receiver is a big concern. Not sure you do it with the number one pick, but if there's a guy there that's good, I'm not going to be angry. I would go best available of interior O-line, wide receiver, and you've got me sold on interior D-line as a possibility if it's a couple specific guys.
Yeah.
Interior D-line. I think those are the big needs on this team.
Right now. I think if there's a guy they really like at interior defensive line, I don't think they'll hesitate to pull the trigger on that. I mean, the defense isn't just, they're just not quite there yet. They're a very good defense, but they're not genuinely and consistently elite. And a big old hoss that can play three downs. I brought up Kenneth Grant last week, and a lot of people thought, and I get this a lot, people say, well, D'Amico doesn't like big defensive linemen. Well, first of all, he had 2 years as a defensive coordinator in San Francisco, and he wasn't doing the drafting. They did have some big guys, including what's-his-face there that's in Jacksonville.
Armstead.
Armstead's a big dude.
Yeah.
He is a big dude. If you're a big guy, but you can play all three downs, then that's the key these days as to whether or not you'll be a first-rounder or whether D'Amico would like him. And that Kenneth Grant guy weighs 335 pounds, but he moves better than a lot of 305-pounders.
Like he's 290,
I think D'Amico would really, really like a guy like that.
Yeah, well, and you know me, Seth. I'm easily swayed into being a prisoner of the moment. It's hard to watch. You can watch the way the Eagles attacked the Chiefs last night, and it's hard not to get lustful for an interior defensive lineman.
Those defensive ends had single blocks a lot of the time because Jalen Carter had to have two bodies.
That's
on
right.
him. Jalen Carter, their defensive tackle, is such a stud.
Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, the Williams guy. I mean, all of them in there.
Yeah, if you can have... I mean, D'Amico will say this over and over again. If you can get a pass rush with four guys, it makes everything else a lot easier.
Yep. All right, I thought the Eagles made one particular national pundit doling out advice a couple weeks ago look a little silly. And also, who are we most happy for? There are ties to the Texans, you know, with this Eagles team. Who are we most happy for after last night's win over the Chiefs, 40-22 in Super Bowl 59. We'll do that coming up next.